Welcome to the show about your company of one.
Hello, I'm Dale Callahan. I'm the author of Resumes Are Worthless, the definitive resource to becoming a company of one. And I am your guide through your journey. Welcome to the show. Hello there, and this is Dale Callahan, and I am joining you again for the Company of One. And we are looking at, today we're going to look at a couple of different subjects. I've been at a conference last week. You're hearing this weeks after, maybe, or a couple of days after, but spent some time at a conference with Michael Hyatt and Ken Davis, and a very interesting conference in terms of entrepreneurship, taking control of your career and your income, and just some interesting things that came out of that. And I wanted to just explore some of that with you and give you a little bit of feedback. But today, I want to hit the issue of when to quit your day job. That's a question I hear so much of. When do I quit my day job? I want to quit my day job. I want to get out of corporate America. You know, it's really amazing how many of us are struggling with that very issue. I've got to make a change. So we're going to look at that. We're going to take a look at that here shortly and kind of go through some information that in a presentation I did recently where we presented to a group and a workshop where we talked about that very subject. So we'll hit that in a minute. That is coming. But first, I kind of wanted to give you an overview of what has happened since the last podcast that you've listened to and just some things. You know, I'm getting more and more feedback from people. And as I talk to people, that they get it. They get it that, you know what? I am responsible for my own career. I am responsible for my own income. I am responsible. I mean, that word right there is the key, responsibility. And, you know, that's a negative word. It's kind of like discipline. You know, we don't really like to think about it. But I'll think about it a different way. You own it. You own your job, you own your income source, you own the ability to do it. Why not? We want to own everything else. We want to own our cars and our vehicles and our home. We want to own the material. Don't we want to own our job? Don't we want to own our career? Don't we want to own our income source? Well, that's a responsibility. When we get something, when we acquire a home, for those of you that are homeowners, which is probably most of you, you know, when we go out there and we acquire a home, don't we acquire all the garbage that goes along with it? I mean, I'm paying a guy that does contract work for me. I wrote him a check for $320 today for taking care of something, just some of the many responsibilities of being a homeowner. You know, and there's more work for him. I've paid him multiple times, and as far as I can see, the spigots wide open to pay him to do things that I don't have the time or energy to do. So, you know, but we look at that with our career is own it. And I'm bringing that today, you know, is before we get into the when to quit the day job, just want to look at real quick this conference I went to. Now, I don't go to a ton of conferences where I pay money. I used to go to some academic conferences, being a faculty member. I'd go to these academic conferences and we present papers. And that's the kind of conference where, you know, there's three people in the room that know what the title of the paper means. And from there, it gets worse. Those things don't connect with me. Fortunately, for some academics, it does work with, but not for me. I want to go somewhere where there's really some meat. And I paid for and went to Nashville, Tennessee to a conference with Michael Hyatt and Ken Davis. The conference was called Platform. It is the best conference I have ever been to. Now, I've been to some things where the workshops and conferences and things I paid for that I really, really enjoyed. Done some things with Dave Ramsey stuff that was excellent. Done some stuff with Inc. magazine that was you know, really excellent. You know, as a matter of fact, the last one I went to with Inc. that I really grew from was, and I forget what the name of it was, but it's their Inc. conference, and it was in New Orleans. And Bill Clinton was a speaker. You know, great speaker, you know, did a great job. The mayor of New Orleans came and did a fabulous job. The mayor of New Orleans was actually very, very interesting. Damon John of Shark Tank, man, he put on a show. The author of Lean Startup. Yeah, there was many people that were just great speakers. And the group of people, we were a group of entrepreneurs. It was a relatively small setting. It was a great conference. Really great. Was worth the money I spent. The one at Platform cost more money, but it was the best money at a conference I've ever spent. You know, and I sent some email, and there's a blog post I've got on this, and I'm looking at it. You know, just some of the big things for beginners. I was in a group of 100 to 150 entrepreneurs that were in the room. And when I say entrepreneurs, some of these people were pastors. So, you know, it's different kinds of entrepreneurs. But one thing was the speakers, the connectivity of the message. They were all on message as if they had set and planned and talked about how does what I'm going to say connect with the theme of the conference. And many of them were frank before it started and told me that they had. They had sat down with Michael Hyatt and planned it. That was huge. I mean, that sounds minor, but that was a huge deal because all of them had this intense, and I do mean intense, focus on service. You know, when you go to an entrepreneur's conference, normally there's the focus on making money, how you maximize profits, how do you find the right customers, how do you get connectivity. It's about money. This conference really was not about money. I mean, you could tell money was flowing. Money flowed massively, in these people and what they're doing. But the driving message was changing lives through what your company was doing. I mean, it wasn't subtle. It wasn't secondary. It was the key message. You know, in having spent some time with Ken Davis, and I spent a lot of time talking to Ken Davis, and some time talking to Michael Hyatt, you know, this is their real heart. It's a really issue of service. You know, not that they're not wanting to make money. They are. Not that they're not making a lot of money doing what they're doing. I suspect they are. But it's, you know, that huge focus on service. You know, there was that wow factor. Wow. This is real. You people are really talking about what really matters. You know, as I look at us as individuals, and I coach and counsel a lot of people in startups, and hopefully many of you are starting thinking of doing things or are doing things and growing them. Focus on the people that you're serving. I mean, that sounds so simple and so trivial, but focus on the people that you're serving and you will have a dramatic impact. You know, let me look here. The other thing that was nice about this conference is it was relatively small. We connected, everybody was connected together. And the speakers, you know, a lot of these things, you know, obviously when Bill Clinton was speaking, he came and left. You know, there's security reasons for that. But he was there, didn't hang around very long. Damon John, same thing. He wasn't hanging around very long. Some of the other speakers that were there, they flew in and flew out. Not so at Platform. These speakers were attending the conference with the rest of us, including Ken Davis and Michael Hyatt. I watched Michael sit and take notes from every single speaker. And it wasn't an act. I firmly believe it wasn't an act. I know that I have speakers in a lot of times, and that they'll be friends of mine, and I will invite them in, and I will just sit there and wear out a notepad just taking notes from what they say. I mean, you can always learn. There's always something to learn, and we should always be looking to learn. And the other thing that was really bizarre about this conference is there was these very dynamic speakers. And I remember Andrew Buckman standing up, and he stands up there. He's a tech guy, you know, the typical tech guy, not the most dynamic speaker. And it looked like he was. And he stood up there and was reading his iPad notes. And so I'm going to go over a couple of things. And, you know, you expect this in a conference. You expect things to go dry on you. that, okay, you've got the meet, you've got the great conference. Okay, now the lower end speakers are coming into the end, and you know, so the guys and the gals at the end aren't going to be that great. That's okay. We expect that. But Andrew Woods, he was different. He was amazing. He was so on target. You know, I think about when we speak, whether it's speaking one-on-one, whether it's speaking in an email, whether it's speaking to a group of people, it's about communicating. Andrew was so effective. I took 3 pages of notes from this guy. And he was funny, he was engaging, and yet he was your tech guy. You know, and it was like, wow, that was cool. Just to see the difference in speakers. But to the very last speaker, Pat Flynn, I think, was our wrap-up speaker. Amazing. Every one of them amazing in their message. Something different, and yet something the same in connectivity. So, I'm not trying to convince anybody to go to Platform. I think for many of you, I mean, it's an expensive conference. I think I probably spent $1,200 just on the ticket alone to get into the conference, not to mention travel and hotel and other things. But it was a great conference. And I think about when you are serving your customers, when you're serving your people, your internal customers, they paid so much attention to detail, so much attention to taking care and serving their customer, so much attention to the message. And so much concern for the time that we were spending there, they wanted to get every ounce of energy out of it. It was great. It was absolutely fantastic. We want to think about that. I want to think about that. I do a lot of conferences, a lot of bringing people in, a lot of bringing speakers in. Man, I learned a lot about that. So if that's something of interest, if you're a platform builder, if you're a blogger, you want to be an author or something, look at the platform. Look at Michael Hyatt. Join up to his website. I can't recommend it enough. The next one will be in Dallas. I will probably be there. And it's going to be in November of 2013, as I remember. And I expect it to be even better probably than this one was. So now let's take a look, though. With that said, let's take a look at quitting your day job. All right, quitting your day job. Think about this. This is, I'm going to give you the caveat right now that some people will ask me. I don't get this question a lot. Most people understand. But people will tell me, say, Dale, does it really make sense for you to be talking about entrepreneurship, quitting your day job when you work for a university as a faculty member? So I'm going to answer that question for you first, because I think, you know, that's a valid question, and I may have answered it before, but I will answer it again. You know, you have to understand what I do at the university. We are the team, and you know, there's 4 or 5 key people, and there's 10 or so people all total on the team. What we do, we are an independent business within the university. We sink or swim on our own. I mean, our salaries are paid from what we do and what we deliver. So we're an entrepreneurial venture, in a good way. I mean, we have a big, fat university name to go over us, which, yeah, that's huge. It's huge. You cannot, there's no way to shortchange that. That's a huge deal. But that's true of most faculty, though. In most cases, faculty tend to be independent entrepreneurs doing their own thing, doing their own kind of research. Many of them self-funded. They have to go find their money. So when you look at a university faculty, the typical person, maybe I shouldn't say typical, but many of us kind of live this weird lifestyle where we may teach, we serve the university. Many of us have business sectors on the side doing everything from consulting. Some people spend most of their time in their side businesses. And usually there is a massive overlap, which is what serves the university best, quite frankly. Yeah, universities are weird animals in the sense that, you know, at some level you come to the university for the university, and then at some other level you come to the university for the faculty. So some faculty, as they make a name for themselves in what they're doing, they become part of the brand. And That's important. That's important. So, you know, and some faculty do not recognize that, and they suffer and they struggle that they, you know, the fact that you need to become a brand. You know, so that's the life I'm living here, and I know I share that with many of you that may be faculty members yourself. Hey, and if you are a faculty member and you are struggling with that brand, how do you brand yourself within a university mechanism? Hey, let me know. You know, we share your pain, but you know, this is true. You know, at junior colleges, it's even. I know some people that have branded their high school teachers have a huge, powerful brand that they're using. So, you know, but what we want to do is we want to look though today at the issue. I mean, all that said is your day job, and I'm going to think about many people want to quit their day job, and I'm just going to leave it. I'm going to break this up into three different points here. And the first one, I'm going to quote, I guess, a hero, somebody I really admire what he's done and his heart, and it's Dave Ramsey. It's really weird that so many of these people, Michael Hyatt, Dan Miller, Dave Ramsey, Ken Davis, there's so much going on in Nashville, Tennessee, where there's a heart of the teacher, as Dave Ramsey would say, where they're helping people take control. Something's going on in Nashville. You know, I'm not real sure. They all actually, all these people actually live fairly close to each other, too. And I don't mean just in Nashville. They live in pretty close to each other. But, you know, Dave would say, you don't run from something. You need to run to something. And I find this, a lot of people want to get out of their day job, but they don't know what they want to do. So I guess my first thing to think through here is, what is it that you're trying to accomplish? If you hate your job, I mean, you just massively hate your job, that's, you know, that's not good. We don't want to stay there. We want to find a way to correct this situation. By the way, some people correct that situation by taking a different attitude and a different look at their job. I've worked with several people that actually end up loving their work, but they'd never changed jobs. They changed perspectives. They took control. They owned it. Sounds strange maybe, but that's what they did. And we can tell you all those stories, but we're not going to bother you with those now. But, I do want to say the first thing, if you're looking to quit your day job, if you're looking, I want to go home, I want to do something, make sure you have something to run toward. Ken Davis at the Platform Conference, he was sharing an interesting story with me, and he was sitting at the table. I'm paraphrasing him, but he was telling me that, you know, he was successful. He had made his money. He didn't need to do anything else. And he sat there, and I think the way he worded it, I was sitting in a lazy boy chair just doing nothing and just getting fat, getting out of shape, getting unhealthy, and not necessarily happy. And he had some things that triggered him, and he thought, this is no way to live. As a matter of fact, he's written a book called Fully Alive that tells a little bit of the story, Fully Alive, where he thought, and if you know Ken Davis, this cat is definitely an alive character. He's funny. He's full of energy. But, you know, he was telling me that, and I was like, well, and he was like, he said, Dale, so what I did is I decided I was going to run a triathlon. And I thought, and I even told him this. I said, Ken, that's stupid. You go from fat, overweight, and I forget how many pounds overweight he was, but he was overweight. He was out of shape. And so you set the goal for something stupendous. You know, why didn't you just say I was going to go run in the Olympics? Yeah, I mean, why not? You know, I'm going to go play professional football. You know, granted, they may be different goals. They may be even extended in what he did. But I'm thinking that's ridiculous to jump that far. Why not just set a goal of losing 20 pounds or getting in shape or going to the gym every day? You know, something simple. He said, I had to have something to drive me. I had to set a giant goal. I had to break out of my comfort zone. He said, I knew how to lose 20 pounds. I know the process. I had to have something to drive me. Now, that sounds simple, crazy, but you know what? people that accomplish crazy things, that's exactly what they do. They set some enormous goals. They jump outside their comfort zone. Michael Hyatt has said many, many times in his book and his blogs and in person, everything happens just on the other side of our comfort zone. All growth happens. Think about an egg. If you're a little chicken in an egg, you have the perfect life. It's warm. Everything's provided for you. You have this huge, powerful shelter around you. It's perfect. But if you stay in the egg, you die. You know, that's how many people are. That many people have just died, you know, sitting still, going to work, getting in the car, driving to work. You know, you're dead. You know, you look in their eyes and you can see nothing. You know the people I'm talking about. Maybe that's the person looking back at you in the mirror. They're dead. You know, you've got to figure out that chicken has to break out of that shell. That bird has to break out, or amphibian if it would be. You know, you have to break out of the shell to live. You have to get outside your comfort zone to grow. And that's, you know, that's where you are very often. You know, if you think about most people, how they grow. I started growing tremendously when I started speaking in public. Not so much teaching the class, but speaking in public. Something I love doing. I love connecting with people. I love helping with people. And I'm a pretty lazy blogger. You know, even doing this podcast, it's relatively painful for me. Yeah, it's fun, but at the same time, I don't get any immediate feedback. I like being with people where you can get immediate feedback, no matter how, whether it's 5, 10, you know, 100, or how many people, which is amazing for me. That's not, you know, I'm that introverted personality. But if you think also, you know, so some people have changed it by they started speaking to people. If you have a child, you adopt a child, it's a life-changing experience that takes you outside of your comfort zone. Maybe you've traveled to somewhere that you've never traveled before. You take a new job or a new career. You step outside of your comfort zone and you grow. So your first challenge here is, what are you running toward? What are you running toward to change? You need to not have something that you're running away from. That's okay. That's not okay. Let's not fool ourselves. You've got to have something you're running toward. What is that target or goal? What is your triathlon, like Ken Davis? What is it that you are trying to achieve? So after you deal with that, okay, and by the way, for many people, that is a difficult thing, trying to discover what it is we are shooting for. It is for me. You know, I have many goals written out. You know, I can shoot for that big giant thing, but sometimes I have to get to the heart of the matter. We'll talk about that in just a minute, because you know that's an important question. Is what's going to drive you and what's going to be that key thing? But before you do that, I think one of the key things is how do you find that? You know, how do you, you know, because that's the first question people say, well, what do I run toward? I mean, it's always amazing to me when I'm dealing with corporate, really, really intelligent, smart people, and whether you're corporate or not. You know, in this country, most of us are pretty intelligent. I don't mean we're PhDs or master's degrees or even degrees at all. Who cares? Who cares what an educational system has? We're pretty smart. We may be lazy. You know, we don't pay attention to things. We don't grow. We don't do things because, heck, we got it made. You know, even if we're kind of suffering in our job and what we're doing, we've got it made. Looking at some other countries, we're fat, sloppy, lazy people. You know, maybe we're not all fat and sloppy and lazy in the same sense, but, you know, we are very comfortable as a nation. If you're living in the United States or an industrialized country, it's pretty easy. So what is it that's going to drive you? How do you do that? And one of the exercises that we do, and we've talked about this before in this blog, is how do you find that calling? Now, I got a lot of this, you know, probably this triggered. There were several things I was studying and looking at this when I first got into this finding your calling issue. And probably what set it in stone for me is when I met and had a lunch with Dan Miller of the 48 Days team. And Dan has impacted so many lives by what he's done because he's kind of asked the same question. Now, he's obviously not the only one, and I'm doing it. I'm not the only one. You know, but you've got to drive yourself to understand what is that calling? What is it that's making you act? What is it that you're driven to do? You know, I tell the story a lot of times with my friend. I have a good buddy who blasts things into space. He's part of a launch team with the DOD, Department of Defense, and he loves what he does. He loves it, and I remember him telling me one time, he told me what they paid, and I was like, well, that's great. You know, he's like, no, you don't understand, Dale. I would pay them to do the job I'm doing. That's how much he loves what he's doing. Now, that's what you've got to find, is what is it, and I think Jonathan Fields in his book Career Renegade, which actually is a great book, by the way. It's an inspirational read. Career Renegade, he talks about, you got to find out what it is that you can't do, or you cannot not do. I forget how he words it. But in other words, it's that double negative. You're going to do it whether you're paid or not. And so the exercise that we kind of took this group through, and I was speaking to, I just had them turn over a sheet of paper. And this is part of, if you go to my blog and you see that, How to Find Your Calling, there's that free download. If you have the book, Resumes Are Worthless, there's an exercise, I believe it's in chapter 10. This is a brainstorming exercise. But we had them just turn over a sheet of paper while I was talking and take 2 minutes and answer the questions. And if you haven't done this, do it. Take 2 minutes and answer the questions. You know, what do you love to do? And, okay, that's a tricky one. Answer another question. Where do you spend your money? Think about hobbies and things that attract your attention. And what is it you're attracted to? This is the third question. What attracts your attention in terms of television shows, in terms of magazines, in terms of books? Where do you find that you're always gravitating toward? Like I constantly am gravitate toward books like Michael Hyatt's Platform, like Dave Ramsey's books, like Dan Miller's books, like investing books, Guy Kawasaki books, books on business, books on making money, books on impacting people's lives, books on taking control, books on stuff like what I'm talking about. Yeah, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, another one. I gravitate toward those things. Those are the things that interest me. I'm not a reader of novels. You know, I don't read books on technology. Several friends of mine do. They love books on new technologies and, you know, the latest books on using things like the Apples and the iPads and the new software systems. They gravitate toward that. And that's what you got to find, is what do you gravitate toward? Where do you spend your money? What books do you read? What magazines do you read? You know, the fourth question in there that we ask them is, hey, what is it that other people ask you for, ask you to help with? What do they ask your advice? Those are real keys in your expertise, is what do other people ask you? But we had them just take a couple of minutes and just jot some stuff down. So if you're listening to this on a radio or a podcast, you know, you can hit pause, jot something down, dadgummit. What are you waiting on? You know, nobody's going to define this for you. You should do it. So that's the issue of finding your calling. I just think it's so critical in doing that. In our graduate, you know, the Information Engineering and Management program, or IEM as it's affectionately known, at the university that we run, this is we run people through this exercise. Many people just bang their head against the wall trying to come up to. I had lunch, or I had a coffee with Bob the other day. We won't give any more details about Bob, Bob's struggling with this. He says, you know, I'm mostly done with the program. He graduates in April. So he's been well over a year into this, and he says, I'm just now clicking on my calling. Wow. You know, Bob's not stupid by any means. Bob's a very intelligent guy, but he's actually fairly normal in that. We see people over and over struggle with that. You know, he's not the only one in that particular group. I can name a few, two or three others that seem to just now be clicking. What is it that's triggering? What is it that's working for them? So you got to find something to run toward, And you've got to do, to me, it's critical to find where your calling is, where your heart is, and figure out how to run toward that instead of running away from something else. With that behind you, hey, I get it. If you're sitting there and you're running down the road listening to a podcast, or you're doing a, you know, you're listening to this in the car, and which I do, especially on a long drive, I'll plug in my iPhone and listen to podcasts. I mean, hey, it's much greater than the radio. I was driving back from Jackson, Mississippi the other night, it seemed like in the middle of the night, and I listened to some podcasts by Ray Edwards, that I met at Platform and Pat Flynn that I also met at Platform, and a couple of other people. So point being, I'm telling you to write stuff down if you're driving down the road. Obviously, that doesn't work for you, but hopefully you'll think about that. One of the things I do is I have a digital recorder, one of these handheld digital recorders. And I recognize my iPhone will do this too, but I can only do so much at one time on an iPhone. And I will sit there with a digital recorder driving down the road listening to a podcast and record notes to myself. Hey, do this. Or I may pause the podcast and answer questions in audio to myself. And I do that a lot because, you know what, you get back and you don't want to have time to do it. So you do it. And how do you do with that? That sounds like just more junk in my inbox. And it is. Is Dell on a major diversion right now? Yeah. So hang with me. David Allen's Get Things Done taught me, one of the things to do, you can pile stuff up in your inbox, but once a week, clean it out. And so once a week, I sit down with my recorder and paper that I have, and I've thrown it all in the inbox, and emails I've thrown over in different folders, and process them and go through them and decide what to do with them. We won't go into all that because, hey, that's a David Allen Getting Things Done seminar. But it works. But the point is, as you're listening to this and as I'm listening to something, capture the thought, because we're going to go on and you're going to go to a meeting, you're going to quit your exercising, and you're going to go to work, and you need to at least throw a note down, as David Allen says, write a note on a blank sheet of paper to say, answer these questions or go back and do this and put it on your inbox. And then later on Friday, I do mine on Friday, which I try to go back and review the week. And on Friday, you go back and pull all that stuff out of the inbox and say, okay, I need to take action on this, or hey, this already handled it. Many times you find you've already handled it. But So I'm telling you to write stuff down, that's the spirit. Do it now, do it later. I think it's worthwhile exercise, and hey, I'm not the only one. One of the things we're looking at is people are looking at how to quit your day job or when to quit your day job, which, by the way, when we speak on this, a large group of people show up. It's interesting that there's a lot of interest in that. Michael Hyatt himself has a blog post just a few weeks back, if you search on his blog post on this. And Michael's talking about a little more pragmatic stuff in terms of don't burn bridges and do so smart and don't rob from your employer. The more tactical stuff. I'm thinking a little more strategic here and making a plan of where you're going. So when we're going and you're running towards something, and you found out that calling and run towards something, I think the last point here is what many of us don't understand, and this kind of falls into the calling exercise, but what many of us don't understand is that we can, in fact, impact the world. And so the question I have here for you, and this is the third question after what is your calling, is what is it and how can you impact the world with it? If you've done the calling exercise, or maybe you've done it and you've done it on audio, or if you've put us on pause, or while you're running, you've thought through this, and you've got some ideas, think about those things that you know that can impact the world. I think some of you may know the podcast guru, I'm going to call him. Well, he actually goes by Podcast Answer Man. You can go to podcastanswerman.com and find out Cliff Ravenscraft, who was at Platform with us, actually presented his story a little bit at Platform. a very powerful story that Cliff told about how his podcast had impacted people. Now, and I'm going to kind of repeat, I'm not going to get all emotional with you, but he was recording on the TV show Lost. He loved the TV show Lost, loved podcasting. So he started a podcast on the TV show Lost, and I don't know if any of you listen to him do that, but if you ask me, and you're probably thinking, who cares? Even if you love the TV show Lost, how does that matter? How does that impact the world? Well, he has an answer for that. Not that he knew at the time, he was doing it out of a hobby, but he had an audio he played back, and I forget where the girl was from, that somebody had left him a message that he had changed her life through the podcast Lost. Now, that's a little bizarre to me because he's talking about Lost. But if you know Cliff, you know he has a heart for ministry, that he's a person that cares a lot about family, and he's a person who cares a lot about people achieving their goals. So it comes through talking about the TV show Lost. I'm sure it does. I have never listened to his podcast on that. But I know him well enough to know that came through. So, you're sitting there, and this woman had contacted him that changed her because she was anorexic, massively depressed, contemplating suicide, and he gave her hope. And that was all the hope she needed. And, he directed her in the right path. I don't know what all happened through it. I don't know if, he led her to Christ or indirectly or I don't know. But I do know that he said this girl now has a podcast that she does on helping people with eating disorders. So now he, through a podcast Lost, has impacted one person's life, just one that he had many other stories, but let's just pick on the one. And she, in turn, is taking her pain and her suffering and the things that she knows and she's an expert in because she's lived it, and she's helping others. How bizarre is that? And if you're like me, I see this kind of thing daily. Literally daily. I see people making money, helping people, having people say thank you for what you're doing while they're paying you money. I see this all the time, and yet it continues to amaze me because I'm used to the society that you are, that we go and we buy something and we're somewhat aggravated with the stores or the company we buy it with, and we somewhat expect them to be ripping us off. We have this culture and this attitude that the business guy is a bad guy. That girl's selling me something. She's selling me a low quality product. She's just trying to make money. That's a terrible way of looking at things. And, unfortunately, that is sometimes a true way of looking at things. But that's not what we're doing here. That's not what you are doing. You're looking at how you can impact people. Cliff here has impacted people by what he is doing. He has impacted people's lives by what he is doing. Over and over again, I see people, if you go to the website Hyster Sisters, by the way, I'm not going to try to spell it, but spell a hysterectomy. There's a website started by a woman who was dealing with, does she need a hysterectomy or not? Can't get a lot of information from the docs. So did her own research, put together a website. Now the website is huge because there's a lot of other people that want to know that. There's websites on all kinds of issues. There's seminars, conferences, books, coaches on all kinds of issues. I did a talk the other night and I was telling people that, if you have diabetes and you've managed to live with diabetes and kind of figured it out and, overcome it in the sense, or maybe even defeated it, and you have expertise, especially for that person who's just now realizing they have it and trying to get control of their life, and, it's somewhat of a depressing time. It's a time where you feel like you've lost control. how much you can help. Because, you know, the docs, as good as a doc may want to be, they only have a few minutes. They only have a few minutes to help you. You're not going to get it. You can read books and everything, but you need help. And I was telling them, you know, there's people that do nothing but coach families with diabetes or people with diabetes. There's one lady I know that coaches people with children with diabetes because she's an expert at it, because she's lived it. And when I said that, there's a lady in the audience that raised her hand and said, "Where can I find this person?" I mean, I had identified her pain. She was like, "I want to talk to them." You know, I know one of the gals in our program, she has the heart of helping people who are the healthcare providers. I mean, if you have somebody in your family who's disabled or maybe has Alzheimer's or something, and you're the provider for them, who's providing for you? You know, I look at the things like Wounded Warriors, and one of the things they focus on are those people that provide the health care and the daily day-to-day care for the Wounded Warriors, because they need to be provided for. And Pam, one of our clients, you know, she's taken that on. That's an area of expertise of hers, to help those people that are the caregivers. And so, where are the opportunities for you? What is it that you know, that you uniquely know, that you can impact the world with? Michael Hyatt at the end of the conference, and as you think through this, write down ideas, think about things you can do, brainstorm. You may not have the answers. You're looking at how to run away from your day job, and what are you going to run toward? What is the answer to you? You know, what kind of things to come up with? Michael Hyatt asked this question at the end of platform, and he told everybody to write it down. And he said, "I want you to come up with the next three steps, the next simple three action steps that you're going to take right after you leave this conference." Now, his point was, I'm trying to focus you down to the next actions. Very powerful, by the way. If you've read my blog, I got some blog posts on focus on the next action to success. Matter of fact, that's been the key to helping me in my time management. Then he asked the question, write down the reasons I cannot quit. What is at stake? So as you come up with ideas, think about this. What's at stake? What's at stake if you don't serve the people that you are uniquely gifted to serve? What happens if you don't serve them? That's a very interesting question. When Michael asked us to write that down, we all kind of quiet. And the first thing I wrote down was, I will not make as much money. You know, and there's something to me when I wrote it, it was empty. I felt empty answering that question. And I thought, I don't care. I mean, do I want money? Yes. Do I like earning money? Yes. Will there ever be an end to that? Probably not. So I'm sitting there thinking, that's not it, though. And what it came down to for me was the people that I impact. Just like in the kind of things I'm talking about right now. If I leave people sitting in their cubicles in insane positions and they're trying to escape, they're trying to take control of their life, and I don't help them, I feel really dead inside. Does that make sense? I mean, you may feel dead at your job, but I feel dead if I can't help you. I feel dead if I don't even try. What I'm saying to you may not connect with you. What I'm saying may not be the right thing for you. But if I don't try to help people, I'm dead inside. It's absolutely critical. You've got to figure out what it is that's driving you. Just like Ken Davis, what drove him to go decide to run a triathlon? What is that for you? Well, I hope all this gives you something to think about. I hope that you know, as you look toward running away or finding something or when to quit your day job, remember, find something to run toward, find out what you're called to do, and try to impact the world. You know, and if you're sitting there saying, I don't think I can, I just want to encourage you that you can. You don't have to have all the answers. And I hear this over and over and over and over from entrepreneurs, in particular entrepreneurs, sometimes authors, pastors, and I'm going to throw all of them as entrepreneurs. You know, you don't have to have all the answers. You just have to figure out and take the next step. You kind of have to be say, hey, I just want to help you, and this is what it's going to take for me to help you. You have to put your services out there. People actually want to pay. I know what you're saying. I want something free. Yes, you do. I do too. But I kind of want to pay, because when I pay you, it puts me in control. It means I have an expectation. And you know, it's really weird. People appreciate things if they pay for them. If I charge people for a meeting to come to a training class, or I do it free, and I can do the same thing exactly, and we do some things through the church sometimes, and they're free, they just don't appreciate it. We do it, I mean, not to the same level. We charge $25,000 through a graduate program. They appreciate it a lot more. But even if it's $100, if it's $50, whatever it is, you know, people appreciate things that they invest in. And you may be part of their solution, so you want to do that. So I want to encourage, if you're listening to this on iTunes, I really thank you for doing that, for participating with me. I truly am looking for feedback. If you're listening to this through the radio, same thing. Give me feedback. What is it that we're missing? Where are we missing you? Don't be silent. There's no reason to do that. You would be helping me and doing me a favor. Rate this. Hey, you know, if you like what you're hearing, give us that 5-star rating on iTunes. It helps us connect with other people. I mean, people read reviews, by the way. And we know in all on Amazon, we read reviews. But, you know, feel free, contact me. Leave comments on my blog and at dellecallahan.com, where you may have found this. You can connect with me on Twitter or Facebook. You know, and for any of you that are looking for that graduate education, executive education experience, that may be looking toward that, if you can, you can go to UAB IEM, the letters IEM, search that on Google, and you'll come to our graduate program. I mean, we have a phenomenal program for those of you that fits, that really want to invest heavily, or maybe your corporation wants to invest in you, and creating a more valuable person, and I mean that in terms of dollars even, you know, a more valuable person to add to the bottom line. I mean, that's what we're there about. So I thank you for your time, and we wish you a wonderful rest of the day. And once you find that